This podcast is not safe for work and will feature movie spoilers. It will feature scenes described of a graphic nature. It will contain language which most listeners may find offensive. Welcome to the podcast Under the Stairs. Hi everyone and welcome to the podcast Under the Stairs. This is bonus episode 334. I'm your host Duncan McLeish. Welcome to the show. Up on this bonus episode, we are in movie club territory. This is Challenge Teapots March 2021. It is of course listener review time on this third of a four-part series looking at David Cronenberg through the decades. This third installment was the 90s, and I chose the one that kind of best resembled what we do under the stairs in picking Existence, which is what your reviews after the first break will be all about. And oh my god, can I not wait to get to those sexy butthole shaped reviews. That's right, a whole lot of anus in this movie, whole lot of anus going on. That's right. So that is what we are doing on this episode. But I know what you're thinking. You're thinking to yourself, Duncan, that's great, but what's been happening, man? What's the dealio? If anyone says dealio in 2021, it is another busy week under the stairs for sure. And it kicked off on Monday as we continued our jaunt through the Forgotten Jolly box sets, making a stop off at the French Sex Murders. Me and Dave Parker working our way through that box set one movie at a time. Today is obviously a Thursday episode for Movie Club, and then on Saturday it is my privilege and pleasure to bring the first podcast Under the Stairs episode to feature listener turned podcaster Kate Pollock as we sit down and talk about Alexander Aja's 2013 Joe Hill adaptation Horns. That's coming your way Saturday. Mark it in your calendars. And then Sunday, we return to the warm embrace of the 88 Films slasher classic You Can't Sense the Sarcasm or the quotation marks round the words classic and or slasher. But that's what we'll be doing on Sunday. From the Teapots Collective, we have just dropped an episode of Opera Omnia just a couple of days ago. Myself and Bo Ransdell talking about David Fincher's The Game as we continue our work through his filmography. This Sunday, you'll be getting the next installment of Dawn of the Nasty. Me and Mark Ball continuing our way through that Tier 3 list of video nasties. Another two interesting movies, let's put it that way, coming up for you guys to check out the reviews or and maybe not watch the movies. It's up to you. We'll see where we fall in this one. I get an actual feeling, I know that Mark doesn't listen to these Movie Club episodes, so I get a feeling that me and Mark are going to be at crosshairs. It'll be fun to see if it happens. I think we will be. I think we will fall on different sides of the argument, and I bet you don't know what movie we're going to fall on them. So anyway, that's what's coming up there. Jaws is Shite, Another Regrettable Outburst put out an episode on Friday just past. That is our monthly podcast, myself and the Baz from Podcast Under the Stairs. Scott Liam from Scott and Liam vs. Evil. We were drunk. We said things we regret. So that show has met its brief. That's literally in the brief for that show. So yeah, go and check that one out as well. All the shows and all the episodes of everything I do can be found at teapotscast.com. Nice and easy to remember. Okay, let's get into this, shall we? I'm going to take a very short break. You're going to hear promos for shows that I love. You're going to hear the trailer for Existence from 1999. Woo! That was up a while ago. When we come back, we're discussing that movie through your reviews right after this.
Hey, feeling down? Feeling low? Not enough podcasts about movies in your life? Why not try?
They must be destroyed on sight!
The new podcast cure-all, sure to get you right with the world and on a path to better living. We have exploitation, we have Italian horror, we have zombies, we have slashers, we have crime films, we have spaghetti westerns, we even have sci-fi and sex comedies. So take a dose of...
They must be destroyed on sight!
As needed, and let the hosts, Lee Russell, Daniel Harper, Paul Romali, and the odd guest host cure what ails you.
Warning, may cause atrophy, African consumption, black fever, bone shave, chin cough, colic, cramp colic, dropsy of the brain, elephantitis, grocer's itch, jaundice, mania, miasma, mortification, palsy, Pott's disease, rheumatism, scurvy, St. Anthony's fire, summer complaint, and worm fit in some people. Consult a physician before listening.
There's an intimacy involved in playing Existenz that is beyond description. They just pop your spine with a little hydro gun.
Break out of your cage, Pico.
I haven't crippled anyone yet. Step into my office.
Now I'm warning you. It's going to be a wild ride.
The new millennium.
This is amazing.
Will bring a new experience.
You're the power source.
We'll see how natural it feels.
Where the playing field is a parallel universe.
The game's a lot more fun when it starts feeling realer than real. No use fighting it.
I don't like it here. I think it's infected.
It's not infected. It's just excited.
I think we're still inside the game.
We have enemies in our own house. I do feel the urge to kill someone here.
Do it. It's just a game. Something's wrong.
Oh, God.
What happened?
Let's come back here with us.
Don't hurt me, Michael. Play with me.
And welcome back. So you've just heard the trailer for Existenz, the third movie I selected as part of our jaunt through the back catalogue of David Cronenberg, decade by decade. The first review that comes in for Existenz comes in via Twitter and also via Letterboxd from our good friend Lonely Bob all the way over in Japan. I hope you're doing well. I haven't heard too many reports of bad things with the COVID over there, so I'm going to assume that you guys have got it under control, but all the best to you and yours over there. Lonely Bob says, "This film is one of a handful of movies I bought on VHS after I first saw it and brought it to college with me to watch repeatedly with my roommate and anyone else who was interested in watching a quirky, weird sci-fi film. What I really enjoy in this film's fantastic representation of video game characters, non-playable CPU characters, and biological VR tech." Thank you very much for sending that through. I'm going to assume you scored it quite high, and let's check to see what you marked it on Letterboxd. Your score on Letterboxd, 5 out of 5 for this movie. Thank you. And your phrase it pays for this one, your one-liner, says, "Are we still in the game? ? Thank you very much for sending that. And I think that's the first time Lonely Bob has sent through a review for us to do on Movie Club. Great to hear from you. I know you've been listening to the show for fucking years now. So thanks very much for sending that in. We're going to turn our attention over to Facebook now. This coming in from our buddy Jamie McCauley, who says, "Existenz review, whoa. I love this. Another first watch for me, and this run, I think this might just become my favourite Cronenberg movie. Being a gamer and a movie fan, this ticks so many boxes for me. I feel like Cronenberg was ahead of the curve with this, like he was looking into some games industry crystal ball. I mean, back when this came out in 1999, gaming was big, but fast forward to today and gaming has become a way of life for people, with more and more ways of immersion being developed all the time. I kind of feel like the multiplayer aspect of it echoes how it is now. Back then, multiplayer was sitting in front of a TV with your friends, fighting over controllers, but now it's sitting alone with a headset on, in worlds with created characters that many now lose touch with reality as their online lives take priority for them. Also, that gun kind of made me think what it must be like for women playing online. And from things I've seen on Facebook Xbox groups, girl gamers being chased by the Boner Brigade. What a cast though. Jude Law and Jennifer Jason Leigh are both great in the lead roles, with Ian Holm and Willem Dafoe in supporting roles, both doing what they do best as the good guys who become the bad guys. The ending for this movie was brilliant. I thought during the movie that it might end in some way like that, but I loved that they did that just like that. I mean, it was a proper Cronenberg movie all the way. Then, just to finish it, a normal looking room with normal people, no weird creatures, weapons or fleshy game systems was a pretty cool change of pace. I probably won't be the only person sending in a review who mentions this, but Inception owes a lot to this movie. The whole dream within a dream concept clearly borrows a lot from the game within a game, even down to the finish, where there's a slight doubt left as to whether or not this is reality or you're still inside the game. This is definitely a 5-star movie for me. I mean, he will have films that are technically better or more popular, but this one just really appealed to me. Now I need to find this on Blu-ray, as I'd like to see more about it. I imagine this would have some pretty cool making of stuff to find out. Tagline for this one, death to the demon, boring cinema. Thank you very much for that, Jamie. I'm surprised how underseen this is from the reviews that have come in. I just assumed, like some of the other people that reviewed, it was a first watch for them as well. I just always assumed that Existence was the movie people watched in the 90s by Cronenberg. I may be way off the mark, and then I err a lot by thinking everyone's my age. So like I said in the intro to this one, I remember this movie coming out. I remember being in the video store and copies of Existence being a fairly fresh movie at the time that people could rent. So old man McLeish here sitting in his comfy rocking chair. Let's continue it on, shall we, into more reviews from you guys out there. How about we do a little audio review and find out what our buddy David Garrett Jr. thought of it. David said,
hello, Duncan and T-Puts listeners. David Garrett Jr. here for Movie Club Challenge here in March 2021. And the movie that we are going to be covering here today, another David Cronenberg film that I've never seen before, and Existence. Now, this is one that I'm pretty sure I didn't really hear about until I was working my way through a horror movie encyclopedia that I'm trying to kind of get through to make sure that I have, you know, as deep a knowledge into horror films as I can. And I know I've heard it pop up from time to time on horror movie podcasts, but much like you had said, Duncan, is that it's really kind of one that's under-talked about from David Cronenberg's filmography. Now, where I want to start with, you know, kind of my thoughts is that this feels like it's from the same universe as Videodrome. What is different here is that this movie just kind of gets right into it here in this movie, where we build to it in Videodrome, this movie jumps right in. By the end here, though, it all makes a whole lot more sense as to why we have this weird place to start off the movie. Now, Cronenberg has a different take on a few different things with technology and how it's taking over our lives. In this movie, I feel like he's really looking at video games. I mean, that's of course what he's kind of doing here, but I think it's more kind of games like World of Warcraft and other ones that were legitimately taking over people's lives in real life. In this opening sequence with the character of Allegra and the others, you know, kind of porting into this living organism in order to play Existence, has an interesting kind of vibe to me because no one really questions it. It just sort of is accepted. And I think that's where the surreal feel that I get for this movie really kind of starts. From this opening scene, I like that Cronenberg prolongs us seeing the world of the game and what it looks like. I really didn't know much about the premise, so I came in as blind as I could. I just had kind of seen from a little brief synopsis it was about video games. My fear, though, is that we were going to get some bad CGI virtual reality like we got in things like The Lawnmower Man or Ghost in the Machine. I'm glad that Ted finally goes into the game and the world that he's looking at looks just like our own. And this also kind of blends and bleeds the whole, like, what is reality and what's not motif we get here. Now, this actually, I'll be honest, makes me wonder if Christopher Nolan took any of this for the idea behind Inception. And where I'm getting at here is we are really blurring the world of the game with reality, where, you know, and that one is kind of blending and bleeding with what is dreams and what is reality, we don't know what is the game and what is reality by the end of things. Now, we do get it explained in the end. I do like that we got that there. But, I mean, I would say for 95% of the movie, we don't know. The characters don't really seem to know either. Allegra wants Ted to just give in and lose himself in the game like she did. Now, there's also kind of a commentary here on letting yourself, you know, enjoy horrible acts that you are doing in the game. There could be a bit of losing your humanity in by doing so. And this is one of those things where, like, I know there's legislation here in the United States about should violent video games be banned. I think this is more of we need to really kind of figure out if there are unstable people that shouldn't be playing this game. It's not for everybody. Like, I've played violent video games like Call of Duty or Grand Theft Auto. You don't see me going out, you know, stealing cars and killing people. I think there is a select few people here that really kind of need to be policed on it. And I think this is more with, you know, parents figuring this out for themselves. Now, the ending plays with a trope that I'm burned out with, if I'm going to be honest. I'll let it slide here, though, as it makes so much sense to me. And this feels a lot like the ending of Videodrome in a sense. Now, that one, of course, is where, you know, James Wood has, you know, lost his mind and does an assassination. Where in this one, once the Jude Law and the Jennifer Jason Leigh characters have finally come out of the game into the real world, they are the ones that, you know, want to end up killing the creator. And that is what this movie is getting at the whole time that they're in the game. And I also think we're also getting a bit of, you know, the creator not wanting their creation to be corrupted. This could go as far back to the Bible where God is upset with Adam and Eve as they ate the forbidden fruit while Allegra is losing it when she thinks that her pod while she's in the game is infected with bad spores. Going along with this idea, we also have the opening scene where the character of Noelle wants to kill Allegra. And there are multiple people throughout here that say, you know, kill the demoness Allegra as they try to kill her. There is this reveal at the end with that same mantra as I was saying that worries Yevgeny Norish, as well as Merle of, who I like that last one is played by Sarah Polley, which I thought was kind of interesting because I saw her name in the opening credits, and we really only get to see her in this last, you know, like 10 minutes of the movie. And then the last little thing for the story that I wanted to say is that I love Allegra and Ted are in this game where there are predetermined things that have to be said to progress the story. Allegra is literally mocking D'Arcy Nader right to his face about his accent and how he looks. This is funny to me as I've been really into gaming at different points in my life, especially, you know, RPGs, more of like the JRPG games like Final Fantasy or, you know, things of those effect, where I've been like Ted, where I've got so annoyed trying to figure out how to progress the story. But seeing it play out in, you know, more of a reality like this game is, it's just kind of funny. And, you know, it also kind of looks, you know, real, by the way, and that kind of adds another type of layer to it for me. Now, as for the effects, I think Cronenberg really nails the practicals here and really just incorporates his, you know, body horror that he's known for. I love that we have this gun that is able to shoot Allegra here in the beginning, and it's made out of bone and, you know, different natural parts. Human teeth being the bullets was a good touch. It wouldn't be able to shoot in real life, but I can suspend disbelief in the world that this is built. I'm also a fan of the fact that we have these game consoles that are made from different parts of mutated amphibians. This feels something like from Jurassic Park where, you know, they use DNA of these animals. And again, you know, this movie does it in a way where I can believe it. I've also said that I love the game that we're seeing is way more advanced virtual reality. And I can buy into that because I have to be honest, I'm waiting for this to be a reality in the real world where we're playing video games that look just like our own. And I mean, I think that's the point where, you know, even these World of Warcraft people might just, you know, completely snap like this movie's trying to state here. So the last thing I kind of want to go into would be the acting. Lee does a great job here. What is interesting is that her character feels a lot like the one that she's in Possessor with, or like that character, you know, could be the version of where this character of Allegra finally ends up. I also should slide in here that Possessor could also take place in the same world to me. To get back to my point, though, I love the way that Lee kind of just is lost in this virtual reality and keeps trying to get Ted to eat of this forbidden fruit and get lost in it. I was shocked to see that Jude Law was in this movie as well. I love the character that he is so apprehensive. Despite this, he is seduced by Allegra until he becomes as addicted as she is in the end as well. I love that we have cameos here by Ian Holm, William Dafoe, McKellar, Polly, Silverman, Oster Hughes, as well as Lemench. I feel like along with the rest of the cast, they round this out for really what is needed. So in conclusion here, I liked what this movie is doing. As I've kept saying here, this feels a lot like it could be in the same world as Videodrome or even Possessor. With the former, it is looking at how advanced gaming is getting, and if you're not careful, it can take over your life. I thought that the acting was good in making it feel more and more believable. The effects work well here. The reveal at the end worked for me, and I would say this even influenced some major films after it, if you ask me. The soundtrack also fits for what was needed to me, but I'll be honest, I didn't really notice it as much with this first viewing. That's always something I kind of think I kind of pick up on more after a second one. But I would rate this as an above average movie. There are some disjointed parts for me that, now that I've seen this, I do want to give it a rewatch to see if knowing could kind of clear up my problems with it. So after this initial viewing here, Duncan, I'm going to come in with a 4 out of 5. So despite my problems, I still thought this was a good movie and one that I do really need to see again. So I thank you for, you know, selecting it and finally allowing me to tick this off of my list of, you know, films that I haven't seen, especially from Cronenberg. And then for my tagline, Duncan, I decided to go with, in this world of gaming, existence blurs dangerous lines of the real and virtual reality. Can you figure out which is which? Not my best work. I do think my last two were a little bit better than that one, but I still think that kind of gives you an interesting kind of look at that. Can't wait to hear what everybody else's thoughts on this movie, and can't wait for the episode as well. Thanks again, Duncan. I always appreciate that you do these and allowing me, especially ones of movies that I haven't seen yet. This is David Garrett Jr. signing off.
And thanks very much to David Garrett Jr. for sending in his review. Glad this movie connected with you. Another, like I say, another person, first time watch for Existence. Right, another audio review coming in from Facebook from our friend Kate Pollock. Kate says,
hi Duncan and Movie Club, it's Kate Pollock here. Hope everyone is doing well. So we are now on to our third Cronenberg movie, and it's another one that I've never seen before, Existence. I don't even really remember it covering out. Now, that could be because it was heavily overshadowed by The Matrix, also released in 1999, and also dealing with similar themes of virtual reality. Anyway, I didn't really know anything about it going in, and it was a very interesting journey. As opposed to last month's entry, Dead Ringers, this has Cronenberg written all over it. You have overtly sexual imagery, subtext and social commentary, and body horror for days. The basic premise is that a group of gamers attend a seminar to test out a new VR gaming system, before VR was ever really a thing, so bravo for that prediction. It's called Existence, and it uses these game pods that connect to your spine via a cord that look exactly like umbilical cords, and they are inserted into your bioport, a hole that looks exactly like, well, Limp Bizkit would probably call it a chocolate starfish, and that's implanted. That's implanted into your lower back. Now, before the group can really start the demonstration, a realist assassin attempts to shoot and kill the game's creator, the world-famous Allegra Geller, great name by the way, played by Jennifer Jason Leigh. However, he fails and is shortly killed afterwards by security. The group disperses and the PR guy, Ted Peichel, played by Jude Law, is charged with guarding her and helping her escape. It turns out she has a huge bounty on her head put on her by the realists. Because the game was interrupted, and turns out it's the only copy of Existence, it backups people. Allegra wants to go back inside the game to check that it's still okay, but apparently needs Peichel to do this as the game needs two people to operate it. However, plot twist, Peichel doesn't have a bioport because, get this, he has a fear of being penetrated. Yep, subtlety is not a game that Cronenberg is playing with this film. They then find a mechanic called Gas, played by the awesome Willem Dafoe, to illegally install Peichel with a bioport, which he does in another not-so-subtle sexualized scene to the point you could kind of argue it even simulates rape. It's not very comfortable viewing. But the port is faulty and short-circuits the game pods when they try to use it. So Peichel kills Gas when he turns on... So he turns a gun on Allegra, and they... I keep wanting to call her Electra, sorry. So Gas has pulled a gun on Allegra, and Peichel kills him, and they escape. So they eventually find solace and a new bioport for Peichel from Allegra's longtime friend, Kiri Vinica, who is played by Ian Holm. I mean, seriously, this cast is epic. And then they enter the game, where not everything is as it seems. So, firstly, as I've already made comments on it, the sexual imagery is an abundance here. The bioports, as I've said, I'm trying not to act like a child here, they are very reminiscent of buttholes. you know, you have to lube up as well before inserting the cord. And we see this being done with an actual lubricant stick, or, you know, just the good old fashioned spit on the fingers. The game pods themselves are biological organisms that almost seem alive as they swell and move when they're turned on. They have nipple-like nubs on them, which you squeeze and caress to navigate the game. And the whole idea of Pykor having a fear of penetration just, honestly, it just caps it all off. Now, the fact that they can get infected and can infect others when your ports are connected to the pods, you've got the back alley installations, and frankly, you know, that seems resemblance to rape. All of this seems to pertain to a seedier side of things. Now, I don't know exactly what the message of this is, but I have a few ideas. So one thing I thought was that maybe it's a commentary on the influence that gaming allegedly has when it comes to sex and violence. You know, there's a lot of worries that outraged parents were spouting at the time, trying to blame their kids' bad behavior on the video games that they were playing. So there's this parallel between gaming, sex and violence, and the potential negative aspects of those things. Another idea I had was how the players become one with their pods. I mean, Allegra even cradles and coos to hers as though it's a baby, further reiterated by the umbilical cord imagery. And there seems to be a complete dependence on it that goes beyond it just being her financial income and work, you know. It also seems that players feel like they're only able to fulfill their full potential, you know, lead their best lives in the game. So you could look at the sexuality of the pods, the umbilical cords and things as a symbol of conception, gestation and birth, so that the players can be reborn in this universe. Gas even says that the procedure that he carries out on Pykor comes with its own epidural, just like when you're having a baby. So now, sexualness aside, I'm having trouble with my words today. The biological textures and themes going on here seem to be portraying a message of us blurring lines between reality and virtual reality. You know, that we've lost our grip on what's real and how we're living through these other personas. In the gas station, Gas states that Allegra changed his life and compared his life prior to discovering the games as the most pathetic level of reality, and that her work liberated him. In addition to that, there's this whole concept of gaming kind of being like life itself. This is indicated regularly throughout the film, but the biggest indication is the following quote from Pykor, and I'll forego the bad American accent. "We're both stumbling around together in this unformed world whose rules and objectives are largely unknown, seemingly indecipherable, or even possibly non-existent, always on the verge of being killed by forces that we don't understand. Sound familiar much?" And then Allegra responds with, "But it's a game that everybody's already playing," as though we needed that to hone in the point that Cronenberg's trying to make. I mean, the game in the film is called Existence, a play on the word existence. Did I mention Cronenberg is not being subtle? It seems to me that he's trying to state that we go through life not really knowing what we're doing, that we have to play the game to find out why we're playing the game, to quote Allegra. And it's basically the age-old question of what's the meaning of life that no one really has an answer to. Within this world we've created our own rules, our own roles and identities that we conform to. We have to say certain things and behave in certain ways to be accepted, to interact, to make connections, to move on up in life, to another level, if you will. Basically, we all play games to varying degrees to get ahead in life, not unlike in a video game. Once Pykor starts playing the game, he does start noticing that he has a different identity. He starts knowing what to say and what to do to progress within the game, and he changes his behaviors according to his character to get ahead, and often without even thinking about it. It kind of seems to be instinctual. This is kind of how we can be affected by the media and fictional works of art. You know, we're influenced by people and characters we like, and we can sometimes lose ourselves in them, thereby losing our own identities a little bit. When we game, we literally get lost, losing hours at a time and forgetting the real world, to the point where coming back to reality can actually affect our psyche and demeanors, because we're so used to being in this heightened fiction where we get to be someone else and live in a fantasy, so that the normal world seems kind of dull by comparison, you know, pedestrian, and all you want to do is get back to the fantasy. I'm not a huge gamer, but I certainly get this with books that I love, so I can completely understand that mentality. Whether you consider this a good thing or a bad thing, we've embraced this over the last 20 years. I mean, if you think about how gaming has become so mainstream, even things like conventions and cosplay, things that used to be considered geeky, are now not only accepted, but admired. In Existence, the realist assassins, are opposed to this concept, going after the game creator because they believe the games are dangerous and that the players are losing their touch on reality. Angry parents aside, you could also compare them to the censors and the government members trying to limit people's exposure to what these games have to offer: violent, sex, and a potential disconnect. I think this film explores these themes really well and makes for incredibly interesting viewing. We follow these characters, and by the end, when we get to this crescendo, I did almost feel a little bit let down by how it turned out. But then the final showdown occurs, and I realise that it's more than just your "and it was all a dream" scenario. Because although the things that have occurred throughout the movie were only a game, the actions and motives within our Inception-like scenarios were all influenced and bled through from the real world. Interestingly, this is almost an antithesis from my previous observations, but I believe it just further supports my theories of lines between reality and virtual reality being blurred, with the underlying commentary of whether or not that this is a good thing. As it turns out, Allegra and Pykele are actually real-life realist assassins, and were using the game to work out whether the creator was actually the best at, to use their word, deforming reality. Once they played the game and confirmed that that was the case, they assassinate him and his assistant. But before leaving, they point their guns at one of the other players, who utters the final line of the film: "Are we still in the game?" Pretty apt. After I watched the whole film and I realised how the real world influences and bleeds into the game, like, so I want to go back and re-watch this, as it's going to be one of those, I think, that where now you know it will probably be mega obvious. For example, one thing that I noticed is how Allegra's hair changes depending on which world she's in. So the deeper in the game she goes, the more crimped her hair becomes. So the fact that her hair is partly crimped in Transcendence, which is the gaming world that we're led to believe is real, you know, it's like partly straight and partly crimped, and then fully crimped when they go into Existence. You know, it's a real hint, but I think that Cronenberg has done such an excellent job of hiding things in plain sight, so that it's really only after you finish the film you start to connect the dots. Or at least that's how I experienced it, because I never once thought that the whole thing could just be a game. Overall, I think this movie is extremely interesting and original. I love the variety of characters, especially some of the side characters, like I've mentioned, Willem Dafoe is great, Ian Holm, isn't it? You know, and some of the other characters that they meet within Existence. I think I'm going to notice more about the cinematography and mise-en-scene and things on future watches, because on first watch I was so focused on the action and sort of going along with the plot that I didn't really take it all in. I felt like that there's going to be a lot alluding to it actually being a game, and I'm quite looking forward to going back through and picking out all those kind of hints and clues. The acting was awesome, which is not surprising with that cast, although Jude Law's accent was not the best. And even though we don't know much about these characters, you know, by the end you now know why, I did find them endearing, especially Pykele, and was rooting for them. The score was Howard Shaw, so again there's that automatic high standard. It's very dramatic in tone, which works well, and you know, when you think about how full-on gaming scores can be, it's pretty appropriate for the film. A lot of films about gaming often go down the more techno-sounding soundtracks, you know, for example, you know, The Matrix, as I mentioned, Tron, even Ready Player One, I think, kind of does that a little bit. But as the film looks into gaming more as more organic and symbiotic to our nervous systems and things and our senses, it makes sense that it's more emotionally driven and even sensual at times. I also really like the ethereal singing that occurs on occasion. I think like it creates really unnerving impression, just sort of puts you on edge just the right amount, and generally it just really appealed to me. I also really like the effect, practical, of course, and very icky and very effective. I thought it created this very tactile sort of impression, and created this sort of slight discomfort, which is something that I felt throughout watching this movie, as I was never really sure what I was seeing at first, and then was appropriately grossed out when it came to the full picture. For example, like the gristle gun that Pykele puts together, and then he pulls out his own teeth for the ammo. Just, it's kind of this puzzle that kind of comes together, and then when you realize what it is, it's like, oh, you know. However, you know, despite all of this praise, I didn't leave the film with a feeling of huge enjoyment. I kind of felt at times, especially near the end, that the plot was a little convoluted, and there's so much going on. It really has taken until like I've sat down and made my notes and sort of gathered all my thoughts to really kind of get my head around it. And honestly, there's still loads that I've missed out. You know, some stuff I've realized and I've just not included it here because, you know, this review has to end at some point. or, you know, I've omitted it because simply it's gone over my head. And as much as I do love subtext, there seems to be a lot of ideas being thrown around and spitballed here, and I don't know if I need all of it to be in one 98-minute film. but I think on future watches, I'll come to appreciate it more, and I think each time it'll probably start to fit into place a bit better, you know, as I start picking up on those hints and clues, and maybe, like, the overall experience will be a little bit more fluid for me. I think the best way I can kind of describe it is a bit of a jerky experience, but I think there was just so much going on that it just sort of left me feeling a little bit dazed. When it comes to my score, I'm somewhere between a 3 and a 4. You know, 3 seems a little bit low, but 4 still kind of seems a bit too high for me at this time. So I think I'm going to go with a 3.5 for now. And as for my tagline, I wanted to go with something short and sweet. So I've got existence, gaming is life. Thanks very much, Duncan, for this pick. I honestly don't know whether I would have ever watched this film on my own, but I am glad that I did, even if it is taking time to sort of process things. As I said, you know, really interesting, and I'm very keen to see what others made of it, as I think it could be a relatively divisive film. So very interested to hear those conversations too. Bye, everybody.
And thanks very much to Kate for sending in that review. Right, 2 left to go here, peeps, so let's get into this, shall we? And next up is Tim Walker, who says, Dear Duncan and Teapots people, back again with another Cronenberg film, and this time it's a first time watch. Actually, I haven't seen any of his 90s movies until this one for this watch. I also hadn't seen anything of his post 90s, so the next time will also be a first time watch. Existence, Cronenberg's last horror film, or at least to date, was an interesting watch. I'm still processing it after 24 hours. I think it falls under the same category of those reality-bending sci-fi thrillers, slash dramas, slash action movies that came out around the same time, like Dark City from 1998, The Truman Show from 98, and The Matrix from 99. Also ones that followed like Inception. Actually, I was reminded of the pilot episode of the original Twilight Zone called Where Is Everybody? This was a reality-bending episode for 1959. Existence is a bit more horror though, so that wins some points for me. By the way, if anyone hasn't seen Dark City, get on it. It's my favourite sci-fi movie by a country mile. That's non-horror sci-fi though, but it does have a film noir feel to it. I've never been much of a gamer, so I'm afraid I can't comment with any authority on how accurate the movie is about gaming then or now. This includes how dated, timely, or ahead of its time the movie is. I don't have a clue. I hope some of the reviewers go into a bit more detail on that. I can't even tell if the movie is pro-gaming or anti-gaming. Would I want to play Existence? Absolutely fucking not. Though, I do admit, I might have liked to reenact that love scene with Jennifer Jason Leigh. She did look pretty damn good in that skirt too, if you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, let's not get sidetracked. I do positives and negatives. Positives. It was really fast-paced, suspenseful, and has some great visuals and extremely interesting ideas. The acting overall was pretty solid. Leigh and Law worked great together, and supporting cast was great, though I would like more scenes with Willem Dafoe and Ian Holm. They're two of the best character actors of the last 40 years or so, and presumably they both wanted to work with Cronenberg. Ian Holm had worked with Cronenberg before. That's me interrupting this time. Tim, you should check out Naked Lunch. Just that's the movie I would always recommend everyone check out. That, you know, is maybe lacking on the old Cronenberg, but he's in that one, he's very good in that. Anyway, back to him. They're two of the best character actors of the last 40 years, so presumably they both wanted to work with Cronenberg. The movie needed more of them. By the way, I recognise the actor from The Brood who played the guy who was suing Dr. Raglan. He worked with Cronenberg several times over the years, including his episode of the old Friday the 13th TV series. Yeah, you heard me right. Cronenberg directed an episode of that show and it was pretty damn good. One of the best parts of the movie was the gooey body horror special effects. The little lizard hybrid thing was a typical 90s shoddy CG effect, to be fair, but most, if not all, of the other effects were practical and extremely well done. Negatives. Unfortunately, there's a few. If a movie as good as Dead Ringers has some negatives, this movie definitely has some. The first one that came to mind when I was watching this is while most of the ideas are interesting, the dialogue often come off as a bit clunky. A lot of the plot came off as nonsensical and cartoonish, though they did explain that later on or tried to. I'm not sure if I bought the explanations though, maybe a rewatch might help. One problem I had, though I strongly suspect it'll bother others way more than myself, was that the movie occasionally felt a bit derivative of some of Cronenberg's previous works, see Videodrome and Scanners especially. The opening scene felt like the opening scenes of both Scanners and The Brood, for instance with the little death to Videodrome, long live the new fresh sort of thing, thrown in there for good measure during the public demonstration of the phenomenon in question. The public demonstration being the game Existence, scanning or psychoplasmics, depending on which movie. Only The Brood didn't have any violence in its opening public demonstration scene. Still, definitely some similarities. I know for a lot of people, the whole movie will be a been there, done that kind of thing, or they'll see Cronenberg ripped off himself or made a movie remix of his own greatest hits, like Argento did from time to time. It didn't bother me too much though, but it still was a little negative. One of the things I had the most mixed feelings about was the ending. Just when I thought the movie was falling right in its face and I might be dealt with one of the first Cronenberg horror films, I just flat out didn't like it saved itself. Or kinda saved itself. Again, maybe a rewatch might help. I definitely liked the last line of the movie and it looks on Lee and Law's face as it goes to credits. I'm still not sure what the answer to the question was, and I kinda dig that. A bit like the end of Inception, or at least for me it was. The positives do outweigh the negatives, so Cronenberg stays in the black, so to speak. Actually, my least favourite of his horror films is Rabid, though I still kinda liked it. I'm giving this one a 3.5 out of 5. I strongly suspect that won't be too rare with this one. Does everyone love it enough though to give it 5 out of 5? Does anybody hate it enough to give it 1 out of 5? I'd be very surprised if any reviewer or anyone else in the world loves or hates this one. I think it's just every rating would be between 2 and 4 stars. Maybe one or two of you will prove me wrong. There's often a curmudgeon, and it used to be me most of the time, not as much anymore. You've not been a curmudgeon for ages, Tim. Tagline, the most realistic game ever was just developed. Realistic to the point of being dangerous and deadly. Want to play? Well, maybe not my best, but like I said, I'm not a gamer, so I did the best I could. We'll see about the next movie because I've never seen a non-horror Cronenberg film and I have no idea what to expect. He didn't make any horror films in the 2000s, has he? Question mark. I'll answer that in a second. Well, we'll see how it goes. Take care, Duncan and Teapots folk, and be sure to bring a full roll of quarters when you play Existence. Sorry, I'm an 80s kid and I miss the old arcades. Tim, thank you very much for your review, Tim. Yeah, he didn't make any out-and-out horror films, per se, in the 2000s. Spider's probably the one that's closest to it. Spider is, like, a really dark drama. Actually, probably occupies a similar space to a movie like Possum. So if you watched Possum recently and you thought Possum was in the horror kind of area or horror adjacent, then Spider is very much the same sort of thing. I think they're both from the same short, so I think that's why. And as Ralph Fiennes in it, it's one I'm toying with potentially as the last movie, but to be honest, he has a couple of huge absolute bangers in the 2000s that I kind of feel I'm likely to go down the road of. The problem is that they're probably very well seen, maybe not necessarily from yourself, but I feel that they probably are. So if I did Eastern Promises, for example, or A History of Violence, those two movies have been very well seen, but they are fucking incredible, up there amongst the best of Cronenberg's back catalogue. So we'll see where I end up landing. Then again, I might go with Map to the Stars, which I think is Cronenberg with a touch of Lynch. So I'm not sure yet. We'll wait and see, and we'll see where we land overall. But thanks very much for sending in your review, and glad that you could finally tick this one off your list. Okay, let's finish it the way we always finish it, ladies and gents, with the patron saint of Movie Club. It is, of course, our friend Lee Russell. And Lee says,
okay, Movie Club. And this time out, we're looking at Cronenberg's Existenz from 1999. This is an interesting one. It's one you definitely got to stick with. Because as you're watching it initially in the opening, the whole movie kind of feels wrong at first. It's got this stilted direction. It's got bad acting. Bad accent choices by the actors. And the whole scope of it feels very cooped up and claustrophobic for a typical Cronenberg picture, and it's not until the story really gets going that you learn that everything Cronenberg had chose here was done deliberately, because what we're seeing is not real. We're looking at a virtual reality game within another game, possibly within another game. Layers upon layers of reality here. Remind us of anything? Christopher Nolan, you bloody hack. Wait, when was The Matrix released? Maybe David Cronenberg, you bloody hack. You know, it's playing in the sort of same little genre there of sci-fi. The same little concept, same little ideas in some ways. I gotta say, I think this is kind of minor Cronenberg. The movie does hold my interest most of the way through, although I feel like Cronenberg throws a few too many twists in here just for the sake of throwing twists in. I could be totally wrong. There might be a deeper thing here that I'm missing, but I found it a little bit tiring by the final twist. I mean, it sort of basically ends at, are they still in a game? I honestly don't give a shit by then. I really don't. I mean, a little too many twists and turns, too many characters being double agents in this ridiculous video game war thing that's going on between two rival companies, like they're spy agencies or some bullshit, and then there's like resistance group that wants to destroy all virtual reality games because they're corrupting reality. Which makes no real sense, because even though they're making artificial realities, they're not really corrupting real reality, at least the one you can perceive outside of the video game. That's staying the way it is. I don't know. I feel like it's kind of obvious here that Cronenberg doesn't really give a shit either about the bigger questions in this. I don't know. It's just my feeling. Maybe I'm totally wrong here, but he feels he's much more interested in lubing up and fingering the lower back buttholes and flicking the bean of your sort of fleshy game console. It's very, very fetishy as fuck, and also kind of uncomfortable to watch, as usual with Cronenberg. He tries to, you know, he really throws that sort of stuff in your face, and I actually really enjoyed how weird he got with this stuff, and pretty great gore in this too, in this, you know, in certain moments. I mean, the idea of the gun, the sort of flesh gun that shoots teeth, the gun looks like a really bad piece of fried chicken, basically, like the idea that it shoots teeth, and when they shoot that Chinese waiter, and they have to like shoot him like couple times in the face and basically open the whole side of his head open with the gun before he dies. It's pretty effective. Pretty effective stuff. But I mean, come on, guys.
let's face facts. We know what this movie is really about, right? It is secretly about a new couple. One person in the relationship is more experienced sexually than the other and wants to basically initiate the less experienced person in the relationship into her love of anal sex or whatever kind of sex. Fill in the blanks, right? I mean, the butthole in the lower back is pretty explicit, I'd say, but hey, whatever. I feel like it's a little, it's fun. It's fun, but again, I think it's lesser Cronenberg. I don't think it really goes anywhere too interesting other than being shocking and kind of weird. Honestly, just really weird. It's a really weird movie, and I just don't feel like it comes together all that well. But I'll give it a, solid 3 out of 5 on the Netflix scale. It's fine. It's watchable. I enjoyed myself watching it. But it's not something I ever really feel the need to come back to. As for a tagline, I know I keep forgetting to do these. Literal or virtual? Reality is a game you can't win. Alright guys, looking forward to seeing what other people have to say about this one. I'm sure somebody will have a much more in-depth and intellectual take on this one. I just felt like cracking jokes about buttholes in the lower backs of people getting looped up. Sorry, it's still fucking ridiculous. See you guys next time.
And thanks very much to Lee Russell for submitting in that review for Movie Club. Always great to hear from you, man. Hopefully you're doing well over in Canada. Now, we have one more installment of this Cronenberg series as part of Movie Club before we turn our attention to, you guessed it, another director. We're going to do directors for the entire year, very similar to we did regions and countries and stuff over the last year and a bit. We are going to continue doing directors, kind of doing a similar format to this. So kind of long-standing career directors. It's going to be interesting because the last kind of time frame we're looking at is the 2000s and beyond, in which Cronenberg has been relatively active. He put out just as many movies in the 2000s as he did in the 90s, and maybe slightly less in the 2010s, but he has a bevy of work. It's about 7 movies, I think, between 2000 and 2020, so plenty to look at. None of them are out-and-out horror movies, although they have elements that go that way, so I'm not quite sure what I'm going to do yet, and it's a difficult one to pick from because he really does go from gnarly, dark, kind of action, gangster stuff all the way through to a kind of biopic on Sigmund Freud and Carl Jung. So, yeah, I'm not sure where we're going yet, but I'm unsure whether I pick something obscure and we all watch an obscure movie together, or if I pick like one of his movies, which I think is arguably one of his best movies. So we're going to get there. I won't make my decision. I have a week to do it, guys. So, because Movie Club will be at the 1st of April, I think. And then you have pretty much a whole month to do it. So there will be plenty of time. I want to thank you all, though, for taking part in this. And I'm going to take my final break. I'm going to come back and close out the show right after this.
You're listening to the podcast Under the Stairs.
And you've been listening to the podcast Under the Stairs. This has been bonus episode 334, Movie Club listener reviews for the 3rd planned Cronenberg episode, looking at Existence. Thank you very much to everyone who submitted in a review. There's a multitude of ways to check out podcasts Under the Stairs. Wherever you're listening to us right now, hit subscribe. That way you get the episodes as and when they drop and access to the entire back catalogue of Teapot's content. Don't stop there though, ladies and gents. Check out the Teapot's Collective and subscribe over there as well. You get Where to Begin With, Opera Omnia, Doing the Nasty and Chronicle with all their archives over there as well. If you visit our website, teapotscast.com, you can browse and peruse the entire back catalogues of all the shows, as well as check out the spin-off show Jaws is Shite and Other Regrettable Outbursts, feature myself, The Maz, and Scott and Liam from Scott and Liam vs. Evil. Follow the links from tputscast.com to get access to all that stuff. The merch page for the podcast Under the Stairs is tputscast.bigcartel.com. I got asked last week, am I ever going to bring out new merch? The answer is yes. I then got asked, is there a time frame from that? And then the answer was no. I don't know what I'm doing with it yet, but there will be something this year for sure, so just keep your eyes peeled for that. Now, you can check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/groups/tputscast is a podcast Under the Stairs Facebook group page. Teaputs Collective has a page which is just facebook.com/tputscast. And if you want to check out the bants over on Jaws of Shite and other regrettable outbursts, it's just simply facebook.com/groups/regrettablepod. Nice and easy. Interact, reach out and play with myself and Baz on the twin prongs of social media sexiness, Instagram and Twitter. Both can be followed at tputscast. The podcast Under the Stairs returns this coming Saturday, where Kate Pollock, who you heard speaking earlier on, will join me on our first jaunt under the stairs to talk about Alexander Aja's 2013 Joe Hill adaptation, Horns. That review drop in on Saturday, and until then, wherever you are, wherever the time zone is and whatever you're up to in this big bad world of ours, please take care of yourselves out there. This is Duncan McLeish broadcasting live from Under the Stairs, and I am signing off.